This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Okay, so we've got the wine. It's arrived into either bond in Brentford for you guys, or
duty paid in Brentford, or in bond Octavia.
Oh, okay, So you've got hold of the wine.
Yes,
you've put your catalogue together.
Yeah.
How do you market a wine auction?
Well, we have subscribers that we send the catalogues to. We also have Sotheby's.com. So you can go into Sotheby's.com/wine, which will actually take you to our sort of events page. And that will then show you, you know, what's coming up at auction. So you can click on that. You can download a PDF of the catalogue, an index, or you can browse online. So, you know, interesting, that's becoming an importantly sort of place that people are beginning to look. And, you know, breaking news, if you like, in New York on the 13th of June, they had a live wine sale online for the first time. So you could actually watch the auctioneer knocking down the lots. And that was quite an interesting experiment. We got a lot of new buyers there. And, you know, quite a lot of the, I think something, a good proportion of the sales sold, you know, online by buyers actually sort of participating, because, you know, you can attend the auction, you can leave bids, but, you know, if you're living in China, or if you're, you know, somewhere in Australia or New Zealand, it gives you the opportunity of almost being there, as good as being there, seeing what's going on, and then taking part, hitting that button. So those are sort of a new sort of way we can help to sort of market the sale. I mean, in terms of you know, for big collections as well, we might put out an advertisement. And then the other you know, way is, of course, through our press office. They will produce a press release before a sale. And for example, with the Cheval Blanc sale we just had in June, we market that globally. And you know, through our offices, press office in France, for example, in Paris, and then we have a press office in Hong Kong as well. They can send out the press release, and hopefully then we'll get some coverage. And the last one was phenomenal. We got into all sorts of websites and newspapers as a consequence of that, and you know, the odd radio interview and so on. So
even the odd podcast.
Sorry, the odd podcast. That's it. Yes.
Okay. So the day of the big auction is coming up.
Yes.
Is there anything in particular you have to do in the last couple of days beforehand?
Yes. I mean, we have to sort of make sure that, you know, those catalogues have reached the people that we're, you know, targeting for that sale. Because there's always new people sort of coming to the market, people you hear about, you want to contact. So you make those phone calls, ring them up, see that they're either going to place bids or come to the auction. Those are really the sort of main things we're going to do. Make sure that the room is going to be properly dressed for the auction. You know, we might put up posters of the shadow if it's an important sale, or past sales for a sort of various owner sale posters and things. And just really make sure everything's in place. Also check that, you know, the number of phone bids we might get coming in, because for the last sale, we had to really sort of scramble around finding that, you know, there are enough people there to actually man those phones, because, you know, you've got 20 bidders. You've got to make sure that we've got a department which is, which numbers about 10, but, you know, you can't really be on the phone to two people at the same time. So we have to look at things like that.
Okay, so that's an interesting thing. The phone bidders, do they get a phone to ring, and then that person...
We will phone... The bidder, say,
when the lots ready.
Exactly, about 10 lots beforehand, to make sure we can get them on the line. And then, you know, the person in the room will act on their behalf, you know, relay what's happening, and then ask whether they wish to bid or not.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so the phone bidders, it's a one-on-one relationship
exactly.
with the person in the room.
Yeah.
And they're doing it. And I presume if I bid on a wine,
yes.
we're at the auction, bid on a wine now, and I'm the lucky person, I've just spent $5,000 on a bottle of Cheval Blanc, and I'm yee-haw.
Yes.
Can I just take the bottle home with me on that day?
No, not usually. I mean, we can make special arrangements there, you know, very rarely, though, because, you know, our warehouse is in Brentford, which is about 8 miles out.
So the wines aren't actually on site?
No, they're not, because they're, you know, the temperature's not ideal for wine, so therefore we keep them, you know, under proper conditions and so on. So what will happen is, you can pay for the wine, so you get an invoice straight away, and then we'll release it. And so, I mean, it's possible to get the wine to you the next day. But, you know, depending upon where you are, you may have to have the wine flown out or shipped around the
world. Do I have to arrange that? So I'll arrange for a logistics person to collect it from your site and take it to wherever I want it?
Well, UK mainland, within certain sort of boundaries now, because we will arrange delivery for you.
And will that be in a chilled container, or is it just a courier?
We don't tend to use couriers. We use sort of specialist wine shippers. We don't usually sort of use, you know, reefers or you know, chilled containers to do that. I mean, you know, we usually sort of get them to ship at a time when it's, you know, it's not going to be sort of boiling hot or whatever. So, you know, but they're not actually chilled.
Are they in sort of styrofoams or anything like that to help?
Well, to protect the wine, yes. I mean, if they're, we have proper sort of wine cartons for odd bottles, you know, free packs and that sort of thing. We have styrofoam, and but if you're shipping the wine, you know, overseas, then you should really sort of see that your shipper is actually sort of packing it
correctly,
you know, properly. So we know sort of like, you know, all the major forwarding agents, and so, you know, if you're in China or whatever, we can put you in touch with who the best people are to sort of handle your wine.
Okay, and obviously this all costs money to run an auction. How do you make your money? Do you take a slice of the action, or is it just a straight commission, or is it a 10 pence a bottle type of price? How does it work?
No. Well, we...
Not 10 pence. No.
otherwise I wouldn't be here. We take commission from the seller and from the buyer. So from the buyer, it's 15%, that's that. And then from the seller, it can vary. So, you know, we start at sort of 10%, but depending upon the value of the wine, we will then sort of make a deal.
Okay. So, for example, I don't want to get too much, but if you did a deal with Cheval Blanc, it's unlikely they're going to pay 10% for all that wine,
exactly,
because you know you're going to get 15% and you've got a lot of wine coming in, so you can be quite flexible with your pricing.
Exactly.
All right. But it's 15%, and they call it the hammer fall, isn't it? What?
From the fall of the hammer, or the hammer price?
Yeah, the hammer price.
That's right. The hammer price is the price that the auctioneer will sell the price for. So when the hammer comes down, that is the hammer price. And then the aggregate, if you like, is including the 15%.
So if I've spent £1,000 on a bottle of wine, I'm actually paying £1,150.
That's right.
15% on £1,000.
Yeah,
so
Well,
I need to make sure I've got the right amount of
money.
Exactly.
I mean, I would say it's very important to, you know, read the conditions of business beforehand, because also if we're selling wine in bond and then you want to take the wine, you know, into the UK, for example, you have to add on the duty and the VAT, which is 15% on top of that.
Oh, yeah, VAT's quite...
Yeah, so, you know, or it may be that there's a restaurant or a dealer selling, so there may be, you know, if you're a company selling the wine, we might have to account for the VAT. So it's very important that, you know, when you're sitting down to make your bid, you do spend some time actually looking at the conditions of business, so you don't get any sort of nasty surprises at the other end, you know, because you might not have taken into account, you know, the duty element of VAT and so on. So, you know, because that can obviously increase the price. If you're selling or buying something from a private seller, then it's just the 15% you really have to worry about, and maybe the transport. And we charge a minimum of £25 plus VAT for delivery, and then £7.50 thereafter.
So will that affect the price? Because obviously if you're buying from a private seller, then the wine's going to be effectively VAT cheaper. So,
well, it doesn't seem to. I mean, it's a funny thing, but, you know, for example, if wine's in bond, that attracts a certain type of buyer because they're going to ship it overseas and so on. It also, you know, in bond's very popular with the trade because there's no VAT to pay and so on. They can sell it on. So it all seems to sort of even out at the end of the day. We don't sort of differentiate between our estimates for duty paid and in bond. They seem to be, you know, the same. They tend to sort of pan out pretty much. Okay. It may be that, I mean, what will sort of determine the price at the end of the day is, you know, who those buyers are. You know, if it's a trade, they're going to sort of try and get it as cheap as possible, if you like. You know, if our estimates are right, they're going to go quite low. If it's private clients with, unlimited wealth, and they really don't care, they will sort of go for it until they actually get it. And that's why you sometimes get these sort of, these really sort of high prices, if you like. It's usually, I mean, for example, in this sale, we had Cheval Blanc 1990. Our estimate was 6 to 8, which is sort of normal, and it went for sort of 9-8 or something. That's because you've got private people there looking at it and going, I've just come direct from the shadow, I can't get better. You know, I'm going to pay the 9-8 plus the 15%. So that really, I guess, you can't, before an auction, I mean, that's one of the exciting things about the whole thing, you know, coming up to it, there's always that, it's almost like a sort of game of football or rugby, you know, where you might have the right team, but you're never quite sure how they're going to perform on that day. You think, you know, I mean, with this sale, we were pretty confident it, you know, it should all fly out the deal, but you know, there's always that element of doubt, maybe a couple of weeks beforehand, you know, is so-and-so going to be there or not? And then it all comes to, you know, together on the day, hopefully, and it does the business.
After the sale, and I'm about to get my bottle of wine, do you record the transaction for Providence in the future should the wine be sold again? Because obviously, taking these wines from, say, Cheval Blanc, they've gone from the cellar, so they've got very good Providence.
I mean, how would we know with the Cheval Blanc, for example, that it had come from our sale? Well, the thing with this sale is we had little stickers made for each bottle, so it actually sort of says, you know, Sotheby's on those. Plus, there was also, as part of the label, because they put new labels on them, it actually stated that, you know, they were for the Sotheby's sale and so on. So by appearance, though, and also on the box, I think there was a brand, by appearance, you know, you can actually see that. What we've got as well is a database which goes all the way back. So if you get something coming up, you can actually, you know, you can go through and check to see if somebody says, oh, this came from the Cheval Blanc sale in June, and this is lot number 223, whatever. We can go back and check that information and see whether it sort of matches up.
Okay. What about just a normal sale? My granny's got a bottle of 1800 Petrus because someone gave it to her and she's just kept it under the bed for a rainy day or something. Okay.
Well, go on. Yeah.
Maybe she bought it at auction or something like that 50 years ago or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Can you go back and check those records? And what about if it's, say, been sold at Christie's or another auction house? How do you check the provenance of that?
Well, we've got... If they come up with something like that, we can actually, again, check back, you know, through old catalogues belonging to other auction houses and see whether it sort of matches up and makes sense, if you like. And if we don't, you know, if we're not confident about it, then we'll probably drop it. I mean, especially like a bottle of 1800 Petrus, because, you know, that would ring a lot of alarm bells if one of those sort of came our way.
The last question is, I've now got my nice bottle of wine and I drink it. If it's corked, do I get any comeback?
Corkage is something that we can't really sort of, you know, I mean, that's just, we're not really a wine merchant in that respect. So corkage is a difficult one. If the wine is inherently faulty in some way, you know, if there was something wrong with it, and, you know, it rarely happens that we get people coming back and complaining, but if they do, we'll then look at that. I mean, we have all our conditions about caveat emptor and so on, but, you know, we like to sort of keep a good relationship with our clients. So, you know, if someone's got a genuine, you know, cause for complaint, then we'll ask them to bring the box back and we'll taste the bottle. And then we'll make a judgment call. You know, I mean, if there's something really faulty with it and there shouldn't be, then, you know, it's possible that we would refund you. I mean, if there have been occasions where people have bought things and they just don't like it. So what we would say there were, you know, we tasted the wine, like a 1961 Cheval Blanc, for example. The guy bought it, he didn't really like old wine. So there was nothing wrong with the wine. It tasted fine. So we said to him, well, you know, we can then put that back into sale for you on his behalf and re-offer it for sale. However, we'd never do that with something which was, you know, faulty.
Yeah. I think we'll wrap it up there, Stephen. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thanks very much for coming in.
Cheers.